You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 23rd of September 2021, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming live today at RadioAlbion.com because we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from RustJournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing? I hear you're a little bit under the weather.
Well, thank God we actually have a civilized day. It's with Fahrenheit, it's about 55, 56. Some of my favorite temperatures. I feel like an Englishman. This morning I woke up with a little bit of a cough. But I'm not complaining. This kind of weather is invigorating. I love it.
You're actually sounding a little bit better after our 5-minute warm-up before we actually began the show. But you were telling me there was something that listeners should be aware of, a sad passing that happened over the weekend or recently that you wanted to let listeners know about before we begin?
Well, that's right. A lot of our listeners are fans of George Lincoln Rockwell. And he had the infamous hate bus that would follow the Freedom Riders around in the early 60s. This is 1961, actually. And most of those guys have passed on. I was friends with the very last surviving member. That was Bernard Davids. And we spoke all the time. It was his opinion that, and he had lots of evidence. He knew all these guys. Patler did not shoot George Lincoln Rockwell. He had tons of evidence for it. He sent me a whole packet of stuff. He was an elderly man, but I find out a couple of days ago, he went back to his place of his birth in Oxford, Maryland. Went to a local cemetery and put a bullet in his head. No one's quite sure why. And it's a shame. I'm not sure what was going on there, what was happening there. But, living in this day and age, we may be hearing more things like that as the years go on.
Well, that's a great shame. Perhaps he'd had a medical diagnosis or something, and he didn't want to get old and ill. Maybe he had senile dementia. We don't know. Anyway, it's a great shame that he's gone, especially if he was the last of Rockwell's crew. But getting into the podcast today, we are going to be looking at some of the international events and developments that the COVID scare has kept out of the news and out of public discussion. Specifically, we are going to be looking at an editorial titled The European Union's New Security Policy, which is written by an Andrew Korybko, who is a scholar at the Institute of Strategic Studies and Predictions at the People's Friendship University of Russia. And I really do like that name. Matt, just before we begin, can you tell us a little bit more about the People's Friendship University of Russia? Why has it got that name?
We've actually mentioned it one other time. One of the color revolutionary people got his law degree there. Navalny, actually. This was created in 1960. It was a Soviet educational institution that was to bring people from the third world to study in the Soviet Union. That was the point. It was initially named after the communist dictator of the Congo, Patrice Lumumba. And then they changed that name a few years later. And so it's very odd. I'm not sure. It's huge. It's been around a very long time. But they changed the name maybe around the time the Cold War ended. And so it doesn't have the third world focus like it used to, but that's what it initially was. It was to bring the Soviet Union together with the third world leftists and create one institution that could have them on the same intellectual page.
Well, this analyst is a scholar there, and he doesn't really appear to be looking at things from the third world point of view or the Soviet point of view. He says three interconnected events from the past month will greatly influence the EU's future security policy. These are the West's panicked withdrawal from Afghanistan, the US assembling of the new trilateral AUKUS military alliance with Australia and the UK, and America's withdrawal of its Patriot missile defense systems from Saudi Arabia. The first prompted leading officials to propose the creation of a so-called initial entry force, an IEF, of 5,000 troops comprised of its members' militaries to serve as the proverbial tip of the spear during crisis situations like the one that recently transpired in the war-torn South Asian state. The second showed that the US is still cutting secret security deals behind its nominal EU allies' back, which includes backstabbing the bloc's influential French member by poaching a $90 billion submarine deal with Australia from it. The third development shows that America's security assistance to its allies cannot be taken for granted anymore. What ties all three of these events together is the US obsession with containing China. In pursuit of this grand strategic goal, and with an eye on the finite resources that it can rely upon to this end, America is compromising on some of its traditional allies' security in order to redirect its focus from the EU, South Asia and West Asia into East and Southeast Asia. And I did hear something about this deal with the submarines. I think Macron refused to turn up at the UN meeting the other day to hear Biden's speech, and that was to do with this $90 billion submarine deal that was supposed to go to France, and America has just poached it. They've just snatched it from Macron's claws, basically. What's going on here, Matt?
We've actually touched on a variation of this in the past. We had a program on Donald Trump's trade war with the EU, and the battle was the U.S. was complaining about subsidies to Airbus, and the EU fought back and said, no, you guys subsidize Boeing. Now, this, of course, has nothing to do with air travel, but I have the feeling it's the exact same thing, that they're battling over subsidies. Now, on the other hand, the trade war is still going on. Which is the most bizarre thing that you know, and because the EU is now moving, and NATO may be moving, the EU is moving away from the US, which is what this program is about, stuff like this is going to happen more and more. Besides that, I've noticed the last 3 years, there's been an explosion of military drills with Australia. People that I've known over the years in the service are there all the time. It's just no one usually thinks of Australia as a military power, but because of the obsession with China, there's this huge increase in spending, and very threatening kind of. So Australia is going to be a main military ally, along with Japan, if anything were to happen. The other issue there, of course, they're trying to bully the Philippines. As of now, the president generally had a pro-Chinese point of view, especially over the drug war issue. But that's up in the air. It's been up in the air for a while. So that's what this contract with Australia is pretty important. And partially it has to do with the trade war, but it also has to do with who's going to be controlling the rearmament or the armament of Australia to fight China.
So that explains this pivot. It's this concentration on China. And this explains the decision to pull out of Afghanistan, despite sharp criticisms from its Western coalition partners, the working behind its European allies' back in order to prioritise the formation of a new military alliance in the Asia-Pacific, and its abandonment of Saudi Arabia in spite of continual drone and missile attacks against the kingdom from Yemen's so-called Houthi rebels. The US simply cannot operate on all three of these fronts at once with equal focus like before, since the former unipolar world order is fading and giving way to the emerging multipolar one, in which America's relative capabilities have decreased. This is extremely concerning from the standpoint of the EU's traditional security concerns, since its pertinent policies are predicated on the presumption that the US will always provide the bloc with reliable military support through NATO's Article 5. While America still claims that it will remain loyal to that legal obligation, questions are being asked throughout Brussels about whether Washington is truly sincere with such pledges in light of the three earlier mentioned developments over the past month. These fears are influencing the bloc's gradual formulation of a comparatively more independent security policy. And this really surprises me, because America seems to be as threatened by Russia as much as she feels threatened by China. So I really can't see them pulling out of Europe or not backing Europe up on this. So what are your thoughts on this, Matt?
Well, that's why I used Kribko's article here, because he's saying and he's admitting what we've been talking about for about a decade now, that it's impossible for the U.S. to claim superpower status. It's not a global empire as Britain used to be, and it's not a the most dominant military in the world. The U.S. simply doesn't have that capacity. It is being beaten. I don't know why all of a sudden the Afghan pullout is – this is what suddenly has dawned on Europe, that the U.S. can't be trusted. The U.S. has lost every battle it ever had since World War II, and even that was very, very iffy for a whole lot of reasons. So only now they're figuring out the U.S. can't be trusted. We've been talking about this for a long time. And it's not that they don't try, I mean, the U.S. pulls out of every treaty it doesn't like, but more than that, importantly, they simply can't win. They've lost pretty much every battle. Somalia was a humiliation. That Grenada was almost a humiliation. I think Afghanistan, we were the very first ones to talk about it as a surrender. Now everyone's talking about it. That was the most blatant and humiliating of the many humiliations the U.S. has gone through. And notice that many of the EU states, and that's why he's being a little dramatic here, they don't see China or Russia as a threat at all. The only reason that the U.S. sees them as a threat is ideological and economic. But beyond that, of course, they're constantly provoking. And it's the oligarchs in both the U.S. and Russia that are cooperating here. The only reason that the Russians are spending on these new weapon systems, that they don't know what the U.S. is going to do, and China's in the same boat. The EU, however, doesn't see this as a problem. Many, especially Germany, is making a lot of money in the Russian market. That's why Germany is refusing to follow these sanctions. That's why the Belt and Road Initiative from China has gone right up into Central Europe. They don't see this as a problem. So in terms of their security commitments, what do they think Russia's going to do? Invade Poland tomorrow? This is ridiculous. We even talked about the COVID vaccine as yet another threat to the U.S., because apparently it's much better than Sputnik. So it says every little thing, the U.S. is seeing its influence, its reputation, its money, finances fall to pieces. And yet these other countries, Russia, China, and its allies, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, doing comparatively very, very well. And that's the threat. This is what happens when you have a wounded animal cornered. It's going to lash out, and it can get nasty.
Well, this IEF, this force of 5,000 troops, is a step in the direction of meeting some of the EU's most immediate envisioned security needs. But among the most comprehensive ones in the minds of its decision makers is the issue of so-called missile defence. Thus far, this was assumed to be ensured by the US in order to protect the bloc from relevant threats allegedly coming from Iran and North Korea, although Russia has always claimed that America's justification for the deployment of such systems in Europe is nothing more than a smokescreen for clandestinely undercutting its nuclear second strike capabilities. Moscow has explained these concerns by pointing to how unlikely it is that either of those two countries would target the EU, even US military assets within it, and drawing attention to the fact that Washington could also deploy offensive weaponry at those sites under the cover of supposedly being defensive, in order to enhance its nuclear first strike capabilities against Russia. Be that as it may, two decades worth of incessant information warfare against EU decision makers and their people alike have convinced the vast majority of them that missile defence is one of the continent's top security concerns. This means that it could very well figure as the flagship project of the bloc's forthcoming comparatively independent security policy, that is in the long process of formulating. After all, in their minds, the US is becoming too unreliable of a partner. So do they seriously think that the EU is going to create its own missile defense? I mean, do you think that is a valid prospect upcoming, Matt?
So I tend to think that he's being a little dramatic again. This IEF is really symbolic. The claim is that, and this is the EU as such, saying that the U.S. simply, they weren't able to get people out of Kabul, just like it could barely do it in Saigon in 75, 73, 75. and therefore we have to have a force like this to take care of things like that. But the greater point is that the U.S. doesn't have the capacity. It simply doesn't have the military. It doesn't have the competence to handle even a relatively small issue like that, like getting people out of an area, like logistics. If it can't handle that, what else can it handle? I strongly doubt that either – well, I mean, France dropped out of NATO years ago and created its own nuclear arsenal. So it has been done before. You have countries dropping out of the EU, like Britain and possibly Italy and maybe even Greece. So things are falling apart there. No one trusts the U.S. both financially and militarily. And so there is some reason to believe that. Whether there is the money, the capacity, I mean, Western European armies have never really fought anywhere. You have these politicians, these female defense ministers in these countries with no military experience. They're just political plums to give the people because they know they're not going to have to worry about it. The U.S. is going to take care of all of that. What are the Western European armies, with the exception of Britain, what is their purpose, you know, other than logistics? And they have no capacity. So they figure, well, the U.S. is going to spend all this money. We don't have to spend any. And maybe that's coming to an end. Trump wanted to bring that to an end slowly. So this whole concept is not so much getting people out of Kabul, but that's a symbol for saying that we can't trust the U.S. with any kind of military apparatus because they're losing everywhere. Had they been listening to us for the last 5 years, they would have known that a long time ago.
So America's going to provide this IEF, this expeditionary force, and Europe's going to provide missile defense. Well, in the minds of the EU, the US is becoming too unreliable of a partner, as evidenced by President Joe Biden practically continuing most of his predecessor Donald Trump's geopolitical policies with respect to Afghanistan and Australia, both of which show how little American leaders care about their European allies' concerns. Saudi Arabia is the exception in this comparison, since Trump was fully committed to its security, while Biden is backtracking on it, presumably in pursuit of a more comprehensive regional deal with that kingdom's Iranian rivals. The Saudi case study is extremely important from the perspective of the EU's missile defense concerns, though, since prior reports show that America's pertinent systems there failed to perform as expected. While Patriots are supposed to have a somewhat different function from the other equipment deployed as part of the US shield in Europe, it still set a very troubling precedent by showing that America's wares cannot be fully relied upon. If missile defense is to become the flagship project of a comparatively more independent EU security policy in the eventual future, then its members will have to commit massive amounts of time, money, and effort towards improving upon the shortcomings of their much more technologically advanced American allies' systems. But this prediction should not automatically put people off. Cynically speaking, all of those hefty investments might actually be regarded as something positive on the position of EU politicians. And there's 2 points here I want to pick up on. And the first one is this idea that Biden is seeking a comprehensive deal with Iran. I mean, that's the first I've heard that suggested. And the second bit is what happened with the American missile systems in Saudi Arabia then? Is that what happened a while back when their oil drilling operation got hit by drones? Did the missile defense system fail to protect them? Was it something to do with that? So there are 2 points there, Matt. Can you elaborate on them?
Well, the first one, you're right to be suspicious because it doesn't exist. Again, Biden doesn't really exist. These are you know, this is BlackRock investment who's making these decisions. It's a Zionist Judaic firm, and they want Israel defended at all costs, including a massive war that the U.S. can't win. And at least the Israelis could blame the Americans for incompetence. But the second part, we've had, I think, more than one program on this. It was in September of 2019 that these missile strikes damaged a Saudi oil facility. And no one really got to the heart of it. We came very close because these Houthi rebels, which are to some extent being supported by the Iranians, have been winning everywhere. And the Saudi Aramco facility, it makes me laugh because despite them being Saudi owned, every member of that board is a native English speaker who went to college in the U.S. So it looks, sounds like they have Arabic names, but they really don't. They're American in every way. So it is an American firm. I remember in the early 90s when the Iraq war first started, the Patriot missile, that was, everyone was talking about it. The U.S. is invincible because we can shoot missiles out of the sky. We don't have to worry about nukes. We don't have to worry about anything anymore. And they lied through their teeth about all the Scud missiles that were going to get shot out of the air. And I knew it wasn't true, but we didn't have the web back then. We really couldn't do in-depth research. You had to actually talk to someone back then. Trump, and this was, again, the New York Times talked about this in 2019, but back early 2015 with Obama, that they were claiming that the Patriot system was shooting missiles out of the air, and it's not true. Now, in the Saudi case, the Americans immediately claimed that we're invincible. You know, it's, that's not a, you know, we shot it out of the air. Trump was crowing about it. But you have a lot of both professional and amateur video showing that that's not the case. Again, it's Johnson's law here. How could you possibly know whether this is true or not? We've talked about this with, you know, attacking Taliban forces. They could be anybody. You know, who do you have to go by? We're not there. We can't see it. And there's no one fighting this. So that's what happened here. And the U.S., the Patriot missile system has failed everywhere. It's not that – it's not very good. And so the Saudis, which is what they're not mentioning, the Saudis went and bought the S-400, which is the Russian version of this, right around the same time that Turkey was going to bringing in Russian equipment and Chinese equipment. NATO was falling apart then. This is what panicked the U.S. at the time. And you have, you know, these videos showing that the Patriot system was absolute failures. But again, we don't know what's what when you see these videos. We can only go by what professionals say. But the Russian S-400 has technical advantages. It has a range of 250 miles, and the Patriot is about half that. It can destroy targets moving twice as fast. It can be mounted in 5 minutes, despite it being an hour for the Patriots. It's simply a superior weapon, though it hasn't really been tested in combat. But either way, the U.S. has always lied about its capacities. It didn't do this. The Patriot is not this magical system. And again, it just shows you one more failure of not just the U.S. military, U.S. high-tech claims, but lying about casualties and how much destruction the U.S.'s the American government's enemies are inflicting.
Well, if the bloc strives for unity between its members, then they will all have to make some commitment to this project, which could deepen integration between their permanent military, intelligence and diplomatic bureaucracies, or the deep state. The EU's military-industrial complex also aims to become globally competitive, and with various dimensions of missile defence emerging as a need for many countries, it could eventually pay off handsomely if the bloc credibly enhances its capabilities in this respect and becomes a leading exporter of such systems in the future. The financial investments to this end could also provide many high-paying jobs to qualified specialists who would have to pour years' worth of their lives into learning the difficult ins and outs of missile defence, which is such an extremely tricky science that not even the US has been able to perfect it, despite being decades ahead of the EU in terms of research, testing and battlefield experience. I mean, really, this seems to me like it's the EU trying to bite off more than it can actually chew. Do you really think that they're likely to set up their own missile defense and try to outdo the Americans on this, Matt?
So I'm not sure what they've put together. Obviously, the technology is there. But this is something, again, where the Russian analyst here is being a little bit dramatic, talking about these high-paying jobs, which really are, you know, engineers being brought in from India. The European systems, first of the military is almost non-existent. You have no combat experience. You don't have a industrial complex there. Everything was based on the Americans. Why are you going to spend a fortune on defense when the Americans are going to take care of everything? They're the ones who are going to be doing the bleeding. And even worse than that, you have massive debt in the West, even almost as high in Belgium as what, 400% of GDP. There simply is no money, and things are getting far worse with the migrant crisis and burning these cities to the ground. What kind of morale do they have without even a functional military or even the infrastructure to make these military reforms happen? It simply isn't there. They could talk all they want, but it would have to be absolutely revolutionary change for this to take place. It wouldn't just be the missile system. It would be an entire autonomous military structure, even different from NATO, because NATO is an American creation. This would have to be their own military structure, and that would cost trillions of dollars.
So it's likely to fail before it even gets started. Perhaps most importantly, from a grand strategic perspective, any moves in the direction of independently ensuring the EU's security needs, as the bloc's decision makers understand them to be, irrespective of whether observers agree with them when it comes to the contentious issue of missile defence, would accelerate the emergence of the multipolar world order by bolstering the continent's credentials as a separate pole of influence and power in this system. As it presently stands, the sovereignty of most EU members and the bloc as a whole is questionable, since most are regarded as being under American control, with France possibly being the only major exception, but also Germany too to a lesser extent, at least when it comes to Nord Stream 2. The Franco-German condominium could thus strive to become the dual core of multipolar processes within the EU, using the shared goal of missile defence as the means to militarily advance this across the bloc. And of course, what he's leaving out there is the fact that Germany's been occupied by the Allies since the end of the Second World War. I mean, Germany's constitution was written by the Allies and she is subservient to America. So I can't see Germany becoming another pole in this multipolar world. She will always be subservient to America. Don't you think, Matt? Am I being correct here?
Oh, yeah. We've talked about this at some length. But the very fact that even with that truth, the Germans are balking at American sanctions. We've talked about this for years now. They're refusing to implement them, especially when it comes to Russia. And this Nord Stream is something the U.S. may be willing to go to war over Nord Stream. It would cut out the American oil and natural gas multi-billion-dollar firms from bringing that stuff to Western Europe, bringing fuel to Western Europe. Nord Stream is a pro-Russian program with heavy Russian investment, with some Chinese investment, unifying Central Europe and Russia. We've talked about this too. It would be a massive defeat. It is a massive defeat for the U.S. if this goes through. The U.S., the trade war against Germany came to some extent because of the Nord Stream pipeline. They're refusing to pull out of it, and they still are. It's almost finished. They've sunk billions of dollars into it. They're not going to change that now. This is a huge defeat yet again.
Well, I think Nord Stream 2 has gone through. I think Biden has lifted all the restrictions on that. Well, there were previous concerns that Poland and the Three Seas Initiative that it leads could stand in the way of this goal by being exploited as a pro-American wedge for dividing the bloc between its eastern and western members. Those worries might be mitigated, though, in light of America's abandonment of this aspiring Central and Eastern European leader. Washington waived most Nord Stream 2 sanctions without informing Warsaw of this decision in advance, and the US and Germany continue to wage their joint hybrid war on Poland in order to oust its conservative nationalist government for ideological reasons. So America was supporting them because of this Three Seas Initiative, while at the same time condemning them for having a conservative government. Do you want to remind us of what this Three Seas Initiative was, Matt?
Yeah, this idea goes actually back to the Middle Ages. It's essentially an investment project, like it all is. The Three Seas are the Baltic, the Adriatic, and the Black Sea. And connecting these, essentially Central and Eastern Europe, and everyone, you know, Austria, Croatia, Czechia, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Romania, and Slovenia. There's a few others. That's just that whole corridor, connecting them together with a massive investment project of oil and natural gas. Now, the problem is, of course, the fight is against Nord Stream. On the other hand, like we said, what's the U.S. going to do with Poland? Poland has refused to permit migration. Although they have a lot of Ukrainian refugees, their economy is doing extremely well. They are moving, despite long hatred of Russia, they're moving to a pro-Russian position for many reasons. They want to put all kinds of sanctions on Poland, and yet they need them for this. Poland's too large to ignore entirely. Talk about a nightmare of liberalism, having Poland ally with with the Russians and the Chinese. Can you imagine that? But it's heading this way if the U.S. continues to push and push and push. And I have the feeling that the hatred of nationalism is actually going to go – is going to be more powerful than this. We know that the regime is willing to sacrifice everything for its ideological agenda. Here you have a clear example that nationalist policies work. They work economically in every other way. It's one of the best economies in Europe, and I think they're willing to – they'll sacrifice all of this for the sake of destroying it.
Well, if Poland's ruling party falls, like some expected eventually to do, then the country would be fully captured by the German deep state, thus neutralizing the chances that the US could exploit it as a wedge. This suggests that the Biden administration's ideological crusade against Poland is actually counterproductive in the long term, although his strategists have yet to realize it. The so-called Polish problem could also be resolved without regime change if Warsaw decides to wean itself off from Washington as its primary security partner after feeling betrayed by its allies' pragmatic engagements with Moscow as of late, and Berlin is no better from Poland's perspective, especially that of its ruling conservative nationalist party. But Warsaw might wager that it is less risky to depend on regional allies through a more concentrated security framework than on its transatlantic one. This calculation seems unlikely, though, as long as Poland's ruling party remains in power, but it cannot be discounted that such thoughts might be circulating throughout its strategic community at the moment, in light of the three interconnected events that we touched upon earlier in this analysis. The US laser-like focus on containing China is arguably occurring at the expense of some of its European allies' security concerns, which might inspire Poland's gradual security recalibration, which is obviously what this Russian guy is hoping for. He wants Poland to pivot towards Russia. But what are your final thoughts on all of this today, Matt, anyway?
Well, he seems to agree with me that the regime right now, the BlackRock regime, the monopoly, is so irrational that they'll sacrifice. They'll sacrifice a temporary strategic benefit. The three C's and other things include. They'll sacrifice it. They'll lose trillions of dollars, even possibly risk war, for the sake of not supporting the nationalist government. It's extremely popular. There was a time just a few years ago, there wasn't a single liberal member of the Polish legislation. Everyone was some variation of conservatism, some Catholic nationalist, whatever it might be. There wasn't a single liberal member. So clearly, and so then the U.S. was claiming that they're Russia's controlling everything. It's all fake elections. And Trump was just as bad as Biden was. There were sanctions on Poland. There will be, despite the fact that anyone who invests there is going to do very, very well. So what are these people going to do? Either we're going to make $1 billion or we're going to follow the American crusade, the liberal crusade. And so far, the latter seems to be the case, but that shouldn't surprise anybody.
Well, hopefully things will look up for Poland and look up for Russia as well. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.